Testing. Okay, let's get settled down. How's everybody doing? Enjoying the winter weather? Or are you suffering? Okay, this is going to be a busy and fun day today. Any questions, first of all, on any of the things I presented on Tuesday? Any general questions about the class? You'll be learning more about projects today, so wait until you wait till the end of the class if you have questions, because they'll probably be answered. So there's a few people who were here Tuesday, didn't sign up, enroll on Access yet. If that's one of you, then you know what to do. The forums today, everybody, all the students should sign up on the attendance sheet. It's really critical because attendance is required. If you're working on a team project, you should have one of these handouts and one of these. If you're working on an individual project for one unit, there was another handout here. Okay, so that's all that. This is the handout for the one credit individual project. This is the midterm assignment handout, which you should have. If you missed Tuesday's lecture, I have handouts from Tuesday. Pick them up later on. First lecture, the audio is, I'm recording the audio, and that's been posted on the website as well as my slides, which brings up another point. Because the slides are online, you may not want to take copious notes because the slides are online, okay? If you miss a lecture, including the one on Tuesday, and it's required, you need to listen to all the lecture material and review it and send a summary, and I will credit you with attending that session. If you know you're going to be missing a lecture, it'd be good to let me know beforehand so it won't be a surprise to me. You know, I get worried a lot, you know, so let me know. Miscellaneous stuff. Talked about the lecture material being online. Somebody noticed that on the slide for the grading, it totaled 110%. That just means you get 110 chances to get 100%. And participation is a key element of that. Since there's no homework or quizzes, the way I know that you're assimilating the material is by the questions you ask, by the discussions you engage in. If you don't want to do that in class, you can meet with me or send me email. I really want to know what's on your mind. I want to know that you're thinking critically about this stuff and that it's sinking in. Okay? Somebody mentioned that this is like a D school course. It is not a D school course. A lot of the design development process stuff has similar entries, but what we're going to do this quarter is use a lot of engineering type of concepts to extend what they've done. So they have a process called empathy. In my terms, it's understanding the problem and the customer. So it's sort of the same thing. We'll be talking about this a little bit more on Tuesday. Talked about engagement. Partly sunny. My father coined that term because he had a couple car washes in Chicago, and he thought it would be more optimistic to say partly sunny than partly cloudy. So that's what my father, Mr. Jaffe, did. Okay. So the last thing I want to... He also had like the first two coin-operated laundries in Chicago, but all these enterprises lost money. So anyway. So remember I brought up this concept of saving the world, and I asked you, how many people does it take to save the world? Who's thought about that and has something to say about it? Somebody says something?
It starts with you.
It starts with me. It's all up to me? Not up to you? You don't have to worry about that? Okay, I didn't know that was all on my shoulders. I'll do my part. But consider that there's 7 billion people in the world. How many people do you think will save the world? A half. Okay, so 3.5 billion. Okay. Anybody else have an answer?
If you can influence the right person early enough.
Okay. 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 That's interesting. Anybody else have a thought on this?
There's different definitions of the world, and your world could be very different,
okay,
just you, or it could be just, you know, this one other person.
Okay, that's getting closer to what I'm looking for. Richie, did you have a...
one person.
It only, if you save one person, you save the world. That's in the Bible. And that one person could be somebody who would end up being president or something. And the world in this case is not just the earth, it's the universe. So it's in the Bible that says, if you save one person, you save the world. So how does this relate to this course? Well, last year, somebody said, you know, I want to work on a project that will have maximum impact. I want to help as many people as possible. Well, that's not the way to think in this course. Maybe later you can think about that, but you should worry about helping one person, and you'll get a lot of reward on that, and they'll be thankful, and they'll go on to bigger and better things, and so will you. Okay? So you don't have to go for a project that's going to save humanity, and I'm not sure the world needs saving. Okay? I think we're doing a pretty good job. Well, most of the time. So the agenda today is introduction of some people, overview of PRL, and considerations for forming your project teams. There'll be a lot of people pitching projects, and I'll be pitching a lot of them as well. And then we're going to have time at the end for you to approach the people who suggested the projects so that you can ask them more questions, get more information about the project. And since you're clumping in a group, then you'll know who else is interested in that, and maybe you can form a team around that. It's important as we go along for you to look at the sheet. This is an order of presentation for each project. Indicate, you know, your likes or dislikes for it. And at the very end, you can pick like your top five or whatever projects. And I'll take this information and I'll post it on a web page so that in case you don't meet, so you'll know what other people are choosing. Okay, so let's introduce Margaret. Margaret, could you say a few words about yourself, RTA? Thank you, Margaret. Also, from Thailand, by way of MIT, Prabhupada, a visiting professor. Say a few words. I'm sure it's not the same class. Okay, same name. Okay. All right, thank you. There's other people who aren't here. Well, Gary is here. But there's other people that you can contact to help you with your project. Deborah Kenny, she'll be our speaker on Tuesday. Doug Schwant is a mechanical engineer. Deborah is an occupational therapist. Mark Felling is a quadriplegic. He owns a company called Broadening Horizons in the Midwest someplace. and he's an engineer, so he's can help you a lot. We'll hear from Gary a little later on, and Jewel Sherman took the course a couple years ago, and she's a graduate design student. So these are all people that can help you with your projects. Just give them a call. So we're going to start off with talking about what's available at the PRL and Room 36. Craig couldn't make it, but we have the equally... this is Marlo,
yeah.
With child.
So hi everybody. The point of the product realization lab is to make something, make something physical. So you guys are going to have a lot of great ideas in this class. And we are here to help you make those into something that you can test, you can work with users, you can actually try things out. Having something physical, I think most people are familiar with the phrase, a picture is worth 1,000 words. I like to say a prototype is worth 1,000,000 words, or you know, maybe 1,000 pictures, because having something that you can hold and touch and give to someone and say, how do you like this? How does this work for you? That's irreplaceable. And so having that experience is something that you will be able to do as well. I am going to talk about Room 36, which is part of the Product Realization Lab, and how it sort of fits into the rest of the lab. We like to consider Room 36 as a great on-ramp. Sometimes there's a misconception that the PRL is just for engineers or just for designers, or you have to be a pro to go there. But that's actually not the case. We have most of our users are not engineers or not designers. Most of our people are in a class like this, or they're just wanting to learn how to use tools and learn how to make things, and we're set up so that you can come in and do that with zero experience whatsoever. So I think you guys will be hearing a lot today from project mentors, and I think it always comes back to people. People and coaching is one of our biggest resources. So we have, here's a picture in Room 36, one of our labs. Having teaching assistants that are there. So when you show up to work, let's say you want to ask a question, I'm going to try to make this device. I think last year somebody was making a device to help button a button. And you may not know how to do that yet, but you may want to try out to make some prototypes, cut some quick materials. There's always a teaching assistant there to help you sort of percolate those ideas from something on paper to some quick things that you can hold in your hands. They may not look like something you're going to buy, and that's okay. That's not the goal here. The goal is to work on the ideas, get from that idea to something physical. So coaching from our teaching assistants, I think, is always, I think, the most important thing to mention first, because they're super valuable. Starting in Room 36, there's a lot of really cool tools. I think tools are a lot of fun. And these are all tools that anybody can learn how to use within an hour, I would say, you know, functionally. Maybe you're not going to be an expert, but you can make it do something at least within an hour. So if you come in, spend a little time, you'll be able to use something. Maybe you've heard about some of these things like laser cutters, 3D printers. We also have software. Both of those machines, a laser cutter and a 3D printer, require some sort of software input, something that you've designed in a program that you can send to the machine. We can help you design that with that software. We can help you get it to the machine. So we're here as a resource for you. So we hope that you'll come in and use this. Electronics prototyping. Very few products these days don't have any electronics in them. So you have, there's some extreme examples like your phone or something like that. But most products are not just mechanical, like a table. Having a teaching assistant that you can ask, you know, how do I light up this LED or make this thing vibrate if a user does this? You know, so there's people that you can talk to specifically for that. And then working with materials, sort of rough tools like bandsaw, drill press. We have sewing machines. A lot of assistive devices in the past have had some sort of sewn component, something that's worn by a user. These tools we consider sort of our on-ramp set of tools. Then we also have in our what we call our main lab, we have a woodworking lab, which is probably the most useful next step for most people. wood is a great material that's inexpensive, pretty easy to work with for most people. And that's a great, so if you get to, you know, a maximum scale or beyond the sort of capabilities of what we have available in our on-ramp lab, you can go up to the woodworking lab. We have metalworking and welding if you are making something that is, you know, needing more structural integrity. And again, those are places where we have teaching assistants that can help you get up to speed using those tools. So Room 36 materials, the basic thing I say is sort of no metal. So it's not a machine shop, it's a lighter prototyping. So some of the things you might find around your room, things like fabric, foam, some things that may not, like wood and plastic, cardboard, foam core. So softer materials, things that you can get going with quickly. So that's our really our goal there, is to get translate ideas into physical things inexpensively, quickly, without too much pain. You know, we want to keep it fun. A nice thing also is that there are materials that you can just use that are there. So we have some materials that you can purchase, more sort of special materials, but there are things there that you can just get started with. And a TA can talk to you and say, oh, let's grab this piece of wood, and you can start cutting it and try it this way. And that's really the goal of that whole lab, is to get you inspired and motivated and empowered to do that on your own. And you can also leave stuff there, you know, carding, if you're making a large project. If it's huge, it won't fit there, but if you're working on projects with a team, you can leave things there. We've got some project bins. So where is all of this? If you haven't heard about this before, I don't know if this was a pointer, is it the green? So here we are, we're in Thornton. This is where we are in this half of the building right now. Our main lab is actually just down the street, just two buildings over, on the corner across from Tresseter. You've probably walked by it lots of times. If you haven't looked in the window, you can take a peek. It's an old brick building. We also have Room 36, which is over in the Wong Engineering Center, over in the new engineering quad, down in the basement level over there. So even though these are physically separate, we consider them basically the same organization, the same place. How do you get started? The first thing we have is a safety orientation and a tour. So that's sort of nice if you have never been to the PRL before. You get to see everything before you get started. You get to have a tour and talk about some of the safety issues. There are some tools that are, you know, potentially dangerous, so we give everyone an orientation to explain, you know, how this environment is different than a classroom environment like we're sitting in now, where, you know, we could trip or we could get paper cut or something like that, but pretty understandable risks in this kind of environment. It's a little bit more in the PRL, but we have a great safety record, and that's our primary goal, and so we want to get everyone sort of on the same page about that. This information, if you have your lecture slides, will be posted on your website. I'm not going to go through every single detail here, but you can get the details here. We do have a lab pass. So quarter pass is $60 that covers the use of all of the lab. It's a great deal. You're getting to use basically millions of dollars worth of equipment for $60 for 10 weeks, which is pretty cool. And we encourage you to use the lab as much as possible. It's open 12 hours every day with staff that you can ask questions. And, you know, our job is to help you with your projects and to get you excited about making things. So we hope that you will take advantage of us. Show up. Sometimes that's sort of the hard part, coming the first time. You know, going through your safety orientation is a good first step because you sort of know where things are. But come into work. You know, find who the TA is and start asking them questions. You know, the teaching assistants are graduate students in mechanical engineering or product design. There are 17 of them. They're very friendly. And they are here to sort of take your ideas and help you translate them from, you know, concepts or, you know, understanding your user problem or need, and then getting to a set of solutions that you can test, because it's hard to test something that's not physical if it needs to be a physical object. So we hope that you'll come in and get to work and enjoy doing things. I really encourage you, if you haven't used the PRL before, to come in, try to do these things like safety orientation, And just come in and get started before you know what your project is. You may still be working on your team formation or figuring out what your solutions might be because you're still learning about your problem statement. But come in and just get a little familiar, meet some of the TAs, learn how to use some of the tools. Those are things you can do ahead of needing to know exactly what you need to make. And it's usually a lot less stressful to be learning a tool before you actually need to know how to use it. So I hope you'll come in. Oh, I guess that's the end. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them now, or Dave can share my email if people come up with other things. Do we have, yeah? You do need to take, that's a great question, you do need to redo the safety orientation every academic year. We do make sort of small changes every year, and the university, which is self-insured, requires that we have everyone do it every year, which I know can be, you know, not the most fun thing in the world, but we all do it too, all of our staff does it too, so it's a great question. All right, thank you.
Thanks. So let's talk a little bit about team formation. I hope everybody has read the project descriptions. You want to fill the project preferences as the presentations happen today. Talk to the presenters afterwards to get more information. Give me the form at the end or leave it on a desk. I'll post these to online so you'll see everybody else's preferences, and maybe that'll help you team up as well. By the end of next week, you need to have your team together and your project selected by the 17th. Freshmen, sophomores must work in teams of two or three. A team can be one, two, or three people. There could be more than one team working on a particular project, as long as they have two different approaches, so that's okay. But you know, you got to let me know if that's the case. I'm going to need a team name, name of your project, a short phrase, and the name of the device that you're going to be building. And you may want to wait a little bit until it develops the character until you name it. So for forming teams, everybody should have a desire to work on the same team. That's pretty obvious. It would be best, but not mandatory, if everybody on the team was either an undergrad or a grad. If you want to work on the project through next quarter, it would be good if you could take your whole team with you, but again, not mandatory. This is important. You need to match your team's expertise with what's going to be required for you to do the project. And as I mentioned, if you don't have skills in one area, it may be hard for you to develop those skills and become proficient in 8 weeks, so keep that in mind. But you could have a member on your team who has those skills, so that's another way to go. Instead of having all the team of STS students, it could be an STS student, an engineer, and a mechanical engineer. So that's interesting. So this is hard to predict, but you know, sometimes teams don't work out very well, but if you have worked together before, that could be the basis of your team here. If you're working on another course that has a team project, I strongly suggest you do not work on a team project in this course. So you may want to reconsider working on a team project if you don't have a lot of expertise in coursework. Wait until you're a junior or senior. The course will still be around. I'll be around. If you're going to be missing multiple lectures, then you're going to be missing opportunities to meet with your team and to work on stuff. So that does not work out well. You're not going to be a good team member if you're gone. Okay, so keep that in mind as well. So there's no guarantee that other people will want to work on the same project. So you have to maybe convince others to work on your project or work with on another project. Maybe that isn't your first choice. That's fine. Or you can work on a project as a team of one. Do you have a question?
I was just going to ask, are we going to engage tours in advance? Like, far in advance?
Are we going to do what?
Are we going to engage for, like, tours? In fact,
it's all on the website. It's all scheduled back in the summer.
So that's all. It's all there. So just go to the website and find the information. You'll find what's going to happen every day of the week. I mean, every class session. For those working on individual projects for one unit, you need to do one of these things and figure out what you want to work on. I can help you with your ideas and meet with me. We'll nail down the details and give you the okay to work on an individual project. Okay? Any questions on that? Okay. So, that's I don't think I've ever had a kid in here before. That's okay. So these are the project pitches that are going to be done by all these individuals. There's going to be some that I do for other people, and there's a few projects that I have. So get your form out, and we'll start with the form. And again, I'll talk to the person who presented the project to get more info, review other people's preferences online, form teams, select your project and team, and be prepared to really get started quickly, because every year students say, if I could do this course again, I wish I would have started faster and did more stuff in the beginning. So this is the message from people last year and the year before that. So please take that to heart. So let's get started. First project, Magical Bridge. Come on down. These projects are going to be quick, 3 minutes. They're going to be like elevator pitches. We'll see how well they do. Stand over here. Starting slide. Nope. Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, Happy New Year. I'm Olenka Villarreal. This is Adam Rosenzweig, and we're so delighted to be here. I don't know what brings you to this course, but I'm just excited that you're going to all leave here with a different perspective of what makes up a community and how important it is to include, have an inclusive design in anything you do. We're going to talk to you about a project called the Magical Bridge Playground, which is being designed and being built right here in Palo Alto. Adam's going to tell you a little bit about the options that we have presented to you. There's a lot of exciting stuff we'd love to tell you, but 3 minutes is not enough time. So please, we invite you to connect with us later. And one of the things that we think, we can't change the world, but we can make it a more inclusive environment. And inclusive play is very important. And we're taking accessibility way beyond ADA minimal standards and including not only those of our friends that use wheelchairs, but also people that have autism, visual impairments, auditory limitations. And so we feel that accessibility should include everybody. And without further ado, I'm going to have Adam take you through the slides, otherwise I'll eat through in 3 minutes.
All right. So the situation that we're in is that there's not a single park in Palo Alto that's fully accessible, and there's really no park in America that's ever been designed with the principles of universal design and engineering, and that's exactly what we're going to be doing. As a result, this is going to be a national model, and we are totally shovel-ready. We're really close to our fundraising goal, and we've been cleared to begin construction in Mitchell Park right here in Palo Alto. I'm going to give you 3 project options with minimal levels of detail because we have the flexibility to follow whatever creative ideas you guys can come up with. Our first primary project is to provide treehouse access. The primary feature of the playground is going to be a 2-story treehouse accessed by a bridge on the second floor and from the ground on the first floor. And what we're interested in is how to convey students, kids, and adults who have mobility issues from one level to the other. Second option is to work on making the slides more dynamic. These graphics present an obvious problem. Everyone interested in slides? Think about that. Third project, please forgive the graphic. This is from Baby Yoga. We have families who have told us that kids with mobility and vestibular issues have trouble getting into traditional playground bucket swings. So if you can figure out a way to engineer a swing that is easier to get an infant or a toddler into, for example, by remaining rigid while they're loading, that'd be awesome. If none of those strike your fancy, we're always looking for ways to make play better, more inclusive, and more fun. We'd love to work with you on this. Like I said, the design criteria, very simple. Design for everyone in mind, durable, non-electrical, and magical, because it is the magical bridge. We are shovel ready. We're really focused on fundraising goal. This is definitely going to happen. Please work with us.
Thank you. And that's my daughter, Ava, the inspiration behind the project. We welcome any questions, comments, and your vision afterwards. Yes.
We really want to give people a lot of time afterwards to talk to these people individually. So that's why we're going so fast. Another
takeaway is, with all these resources available, you're not working alone. Besides your team members, you have those resource people. You have me. I'm on every team, by the way. You have all those TAs in PRL, and you have the person who suggested the project to you and other people that are involved as well. So you're not working alone. There's lots of people helping you.
Greg?
Greg Brown. I'm from Resource Area for Teaching,
or RAPS.
We're in San Jose. And we, produce hands-on science and math activities for kids. We produce about a million of them a year, and we use very simple materials. This one is our staple remover catapult. You can see it doesn't take much to fire something, but staple remover, it's a really interesting thing for kids. They love repurposing everyday materials. We have a new idea for the staple remover catapult, which is a little simpler. It's just a piece of wood with a slot in it and a spoon. Gets rid of the staple remover. Since we're going to go through this redesign, our idea for you is to get your help. This is one of our absolutely most popular kits, but this could create challenges for kids with disabilities to use it, both in using it and in retrieving the thing that they launch. So we're interested in creative ideas about how to, while we're in the process of modifying this design, how can we make this very simple activity more accessible to kids that would have trouble using it. I have to tell you, every child in the universe is so engaged by this simple experience, but we have an opportunity for you to help us. The second one I want to show you is the world-famous Puff Rocket. This is a shampoo bottle, and some of you have this, so you can feel free to use it if you want. You squeeze the bottle really hard, and it fires a rocket. How cool is that?
Okay, it is a deep school course.
All right. So if you need to learn about... I got you. If you need to learn about air pressure, this is the thing. But notice, it takes a little bit of horsepower to squeeze this. There's kids that can't do it. And I hate to see those kids not be able to have this experience. So I would love to have you guys work with us on a very simple modification of this design that uses still everyday kinds of materials to make it so that kids with limited strength in their hands or limited, dexterity can still have the fun experience of learning about air pressure with the Puff Rocket. So we could either do one of these projects, we could do both. Up to you. It's a very simple project, very interesting, and I think very creatively challenging. So it's a good project maybe for people who want to really test their creativity and aren't necessarily into writing software. This quarter, we could really benefit from your ideas. We can connect you with kids, we can connect you with teachers, and you'll have a million ways to test your ideas. We've done two projects previously with Dave, highly successful, changed the lives of kids, I can tell you. And I'll share a secret with you. We have a project underway with Scholastic Books to make this into a kit that would go nationwide to thousands of schools. Maybe every school, 90% of the schools in the United States would have an opportunity to use this. So that's a chance to change a lot of lives. And I've taught at Stanford before, gone through these programs, and graduated from this very same program about 100 years ago. So I have a lot of empathy for you and would love to work with you. I'll be here after. Greg Krauss.
John.
So I'm John Tong, I'm from Microsoft Research, and the project is a technology-driven project pitch where we're looking for ways of using the Kinect sensor as a way of improving accessibility on a project or a problem of your choice. Perhaps it could even be one of the other projects that are being presented, just to use this as part of your toolkit. I hope many of you know what a Kinect sensor is, used for gaming, has basically an RGB camera and an IR projector that sprays out IR, and then a sensor that looks at that IR that allows you to see depth, how far are things from you, and does allow you to do some cool things with that knowledge. What you may not know is that there's also an SDK available for Windows that allows this sensor to be a peripheral for a Windows computer. And that allows you to use the sensor to do other things besides games. Just a little more explanation about Kinect. Basically, it's tracking 20 body joints in real time, and that allows you to form a skeletal model of up to two people at a time within view of the Kinect. This should be moving.
No, I have problems with
The simulation should allow you to see those 20 joints being tracked in three dimensions at all times, and basically you can infer a skeletal frame from that. And from that you can do lots of interesting things. So some examples that you'll see out on the web, using Kinect for physical therapy. Being able to train, record, help people refine it at home with some guidance from Kinect. A little hard to see here, but there's a cart with a Kinect that's following the wheelchair that allows it to safely follow along and be a kind of an assistive cart. Another example here where they're using Kinect to control an assistive device like a robot. So allows you to have more natural, or the phrase is natural user interfaces, a more natural way of controlling devices that could be used as an assistive device. An eye-free yoga system for the blind. So again, Kinect could be giving you audio feedback on whether you're doing the yoga position correctly based on the skeletal model. So yoga is an excellent example of something where you need that refinement, but again, you don't always have someone available to give you that feedback all the time. And there are even some companies, Nintronics is an example, of creating a real rehabilitation system, kind of physical therapy based again, that uses Kinect to give users feedback beyond the sort of professional trained therapy session. So those are just some ideas. The pitch is really to use the Kinect for a project that would be useful in an accessibility case. And again, it could be kind of a tool that's used in one of the other project pitches. That's it.
Thanks, John. Okay, Gary.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I guess I'm helping out as along the way here, so you all have my email as well, and you're feel free to contact me, and it's been a great time of year. I enjoy this class, and it's lots of fun. So I have three projects. I am an orthotist prosthetist. I design artificial limbs and braces. And so there are things that sort of fall outside of my scope that I think sort of fall within yours that might be kind of interesting. So we've got three for you today. The first is an external replacement for an Achilles tendon. Well, it's kind of a strange concept. We're sort of familiar, and I'm going to talk about it in a roundabout way. We're sort of familiar with forefoot running. Now this is a new fad in running. You land on your forefoot, and the Achilles tendon actually has to work in two directions. It actually lengthens so that the heel can come down to the ground, and then shortens so that it actually has propulsion and movement. So the problem that we have is our case, where we have a case of spina bifida, a gentleman who had some spasticity, and all his life he was able to hike and do things and get around without any problem, because as that Achilles tendon lengthened, it would get spastic and shorten and propel him forward. Well, he had some surgery, and all of a sudden the Achilles tendon didn't do that anymore. It no longer propelled him forward. He felt like he was walking on his heel. It took a lot more energy. And so, in this case, what we want to do, because he walks with a... Oh, it worked.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
You actually put it to work.
He lands... This is terrible video. Sorry, iPhone stuff. He lands on his forefoot. The Achilles lengthens. He's wearing a brace now on the right foot. And he no longer gets that propulsion. So we want to design a device for him that allows him to land on his forefoot, bend forward, backwards just a shade, and then propel him forward. Sort of an external Achilles tendon. This is not the answer. So, lightweight, external device mimics the function of the Achilles tendon. Kind of a tough project. The next two were sort of similar. They deal with my friend Muhammad. Muhammad's a triathlete. And that's all great, except Muhammad was born without his femur. So he has no bone in his thigh. And so he wears an external prosthesis with a foot. And the running part, as you can see, well, let's go back. As you can see, there's a leg length problem. And this makes it tough for the biking side. Right? How do you pedal with a one leg that's shorter than the other? On the bottom side is too short, on the outside is too, you can't just have a pedal that's the different length. So it creates some interesting problems for riding a bike. Running we can kind of do okay, but the transition is hard. How do you transition to from running to a bike? So project two, we'll get out of the way, is to create a system for him to pedal, or to improve the transition so that there is a, project three is basically a standing type device for the prosthesis. Okay?
But I got a clock for Steve to get that.
Thank you.
Stanford Hospital, and also was involved with the biodesign program last year. And today I'm going to talk to you about this device here, which is called a peak expiratory flow meter. It's used for patients with asthma. About 30 million people in this country have asthma. A lot of them are children. About $50 to $60 billion is spent each year treating asthma. And asthma is a disease of the small airways in our lungs, and they get thickened and constricted, and breathing gets progressively harder and harder as time moves on. One of the ways that we assess control of asthma, and whether asthma is getting worse, is to use this device. And essentially, it is used to have a patient take a deep breath in, forcefully exhale into the device, and then there's a little meter that measures what the best flow was during their effort. You repeat it three times and take the best value of that. And over time, you get a sense of what that person's personal best is. And then from there, we can create asthma control programs for patients where we can define green, yellow, and red signs. So if someone's not feeling quite right in terms of their breathing, they can breathe into this device, and they can get an assessment of whether they're in the green zone, the yellow zone, or the red zone. And the red zone means they need to get to the hospital right away or get to an urgent care facility right away. You can imagine if you were a child trying to use this device. It doesn't look very friendly. It looks kind of weird. And you can see how that might be a barrier to a child actually wanting to use this to figure out whether they're breathing bad or not, maybe when their parents or teachers aren't around. So we'd like to redesign this device to be a kid-friendly device, to encourage them to use it, to understand what it means and understand the danger signs. You could modify this mechanical device, or alternatively, there are some apps emerging now that utilize the microphone functionality on the smartphone to determine changes in breath sound and then to quantify the peak flow rate from that. And you could think about cool things like having a child try to blow out some birthday candles or something like that if you were going for an app type solution. Thank you.
Quality of voting by people varies gigantically. In 2000, in Illinois, 3.6% of people that came in to vote did not succeed at voting for president. In this country, there are 14.5% at least of people that are dyslexic that are registered to vote. They have a tendency to get three times more errors than everybody else. 6.5% to 7.5% of registered voters have some sort of short-term memory loss. They have much worse problems voting. We are working, the Research Alliance for Accessible Voting. I've been working on lots of different prototypes, and actually we are impacting voting in several states already with improvements for voting. The things that we're hoping to do here with you are a couple of very simple. We have three projects that are approved, and I'll throw out a fourth, just for fun. First of all, mail-in ballots are always a problem. Actually, Don Norman, if any of you guys know him, after he sat down and marked his ballot and then checked it with his wife, they each found an error on their ballots before they sent it in. So making the marking ballots, even for able-bodied, fabulous people like Don, can be a challenge. How do we mark them correctly? If you look, people do clipping, they mark the wrong place. So making something for in the home to help people mechanically make, they have physical disabilities, lots of people have tremor, it's the biggest, disease that people, chronic disease that people have. Then we also have the problem of putting the envelope in, making sure we sign the outside of the ballot. That is another separate problem that we're interested in solving. In New Orleans, I watched the election as 80,000 people didn't get their votes counted because they had not done the right thing with their envelope, believe it or not. Well, there were 11 different reasons, but one of them was the envelope. Helping people sequence. The biggest problem for dyslexics is sequencing through things, making sure they don't get disorganized. There's a variety of ways of doing that. This magnifier is something we made for polling places, which structures the act of voting. But what do we do for home? We certainly aren't going to send these to every person in their home. And we also want to talk about making a polling booth, a foldable polling booth that would go on a table that would allow people to have access to their sample ballots. We find that when people have sample ballots, they make gigantically fewer errors, and in current polling places, there's no place to hold them. If you have short-term memory loss or any of these problems, it's even harder. So thank you very much, and come see us at night.
Founder of a company you've never heard of called Sidekick Ventures. We are designing what we hope will be the first line of beautifully designed home assistant products for older adults who want to remain independent in their homes. Everything from canes and walkers on the one hand to kitchen implements and bathroom safety and personal care items on the other. We are currently putting our first products into development, and our long-term goal is to be the dominant brand in creating innovative home solutions for older adults, kind of the way Octo is the dominant brand right now in terms of ergonomic kitchen products. We are very keen to find a team to work on our project, which is to develop a new type of balance device for the home. I don't know how many of you know, well, you probably all know this, falls are the leading cause of injury, both fatal and non-fatal, among older people. One out of three adults over 65 falls every year. In 2010, I think there were 2.3 million falls that ended up in emergency rooms, and of those people, 660,000 of them were hospitalized. The total medical cost alone, let alone any other cost, was $30 billion.
Our goal is to create a new assistive device. We think that Eames and Walkers, which are the two products that are used most frequently, both present home challenges. I mean, they have challenges anyway, but they're specifically problematic in the home. Canes fall over when you put them down. They represent a really serious tripping hazard, and if you're trying to do something with your hands, there's nothing to do with the cane. Similarly, walkers are very clumsy, they're large, they're difficult in small spaces like kitchens and bathrooms where you need to use your hands, and they're nearly useless on stairs. So we want to create a very simple, very practical, and elegant kind of hybrid cane walker balancer that would provide a stabilizing third leg for people who are doing moving around in their homes. That they can let go of while performing household tasks without any kind of fear that it's going to fall down and hurt them. That they can possibly even lean on with some sort of half stool, not the kind of full stool that you've seen occasionally on canes. I don't know if you're familiar with those. But something that has a little ledge that you can sort of lean on when you are just performing tasks at a counter or a sink. And then finally, if possible, to have some sort of container or pocket that you can use to put your slippers, sweater, if you're any other object you're bringing from place to place. The idea is to create a brand new device for maintaining balance in hallways, moving around kitchens, and making trips in the middle of the night to the bathroom, which is where a lot of falls occur. It is a huge and really pressing need for millions of people out there, and it deserves much better solutions than those that are currently available. We will provide help to any team that's interested in finding research subjects, and the team, if a team works on this, they'll essentially become sort of adjunct team members for our startup, which consists of several experienced entrepreneurs and various other product designers, marketers, and researchers. And I'll be available for questions.
So my name is Donald Delgado. I run the engineering group for a startup company called Aditas, and I'll talk about what we do later. I'll follow up what Sarah says, and I put these slides together to basically show that falls are a huge problem. I'm looking at a different venue here. Our primary focus is actually ICU and hospitals, but the problem becomes really bubbles to the top when we look at nursing facilities. It's the number one. Falls represent sometimes 50% of the whole cost in a nursing facility, both for rehab and for long-term care. And it's funny, this is data from last year from a local nursing facility, and it's very consistent where we go. It's usually during unassisted transfer and assisted amputation. It's in the room next to the bed, and it's usually a person trying to get from the bed to the bathroom. We get to go to a bathroom, no matter how soon a nurse can get there, it's never soon enough, and that's when the fall occurs. There's anecdotal data also from hospitals, although in hospitals people are less ambulatory or there's less focus to make people ambulatory, so it's not a monitored statistic like it is in a nursing home. So the aim really, the project here, and it could be one project or two projects, is to look at, it doesn't have to be a walker, it could be a walker, we were kind of, it's a similar approach, but something that can help somebody, move or get out of bed. We think the biggest problem with the devices, a cane or walker today, there's really two problems. One is the ability to engage it when you're in bed. Either I can't find it or it's not in the right position for me to get into it. And then there's the, do I want to use it? There's a stigma and there's a sometimes an overconfidence. You have a lot of people, especially in rehabilitation, who were doing things that they can't do now, but they were doing things a week ago that, said, I can do that, I can get onto that walker. And they'll do things like reach over, and there's no appropriate brakes, or there's no guidance, and it causes stability problems. So the scope and latitude for the project can be quite large. The team, we are actively working on the hospital and ICU environment, but we're actively prepared to engage in the project. We're focused on other products right now. We have a lot of design analysis tools, so we can help. We have access to fabrication facilities. I myself am a design engineer, 25 years, MSDA. Some ideas, maybe I can skip you. One I want to talk about is lighting, just simple lighting. Today in rooms, the idea of putting handholds and putting LED lights on handholds for people to find was a huge thing. Although if you watch the movie Exotic Marigold Hotel, the idea of just a handhold puts some people off. Even if you make it look pretty, they don't want to use it. You guys have seen that movie, but so there's a stigma associated with the way you design certain things as well. Maybe one quick. So Aditas is basically a company that's redefining the medical space using software that's used from semiconductor type technology.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Bain, I'm president of Roads and Mobility. So we make four different vehicles, all using our patented leather propulsion system, which affords the rider the opportunity to gain very beneficial exercise in the course of their daily routine, which is just getting around. And each of our products is manually propelled. This is an adaptation to an existing wheelchair, which we call Road Wheel. These are our other products, Road Trike and Road Chair. Oops, I think I missed one. Okay, thank you. So, well, it's very sensitive. This is how we are located relative to standard. This is the lineup of our existing products. We've worked with the class before, as you can see, very successfully. We've really enjoyed this work. So today's project is an adaptation to attach and detach the Road Wheel from the front of any existing manual wheelchair. About 60% of all manual wheelchair riders will report shoulder pain, called repetitive strain injury, and that's occasioned by the overuse of their push weights. So using the mechanical advantage of a lever 30 inches long and getting propulsion on both the push and the pull, which pathokinesiology tells us is the optimum for musculoskeletal development, they can get a great workout, but with the benefit of a long lever, aid speeds, braking, steering, reversing, it really turns an ordinary wheelchair very cost effectively into a very powerful tricycle. But the challenge we're having is how to make it easy to attach and detach. This is major because it's got to be easy, it's got to be safe, it's got to be strong. So we've listed them in the notes. You don't have to go through them all now. But it would suit a cross-functional team that could combine the very careful work that's necessary to research the market of existing wheelchairs so that whatever device is developed here could be more or less universal for any rigid frame chair. So we really need some help. We're out of inspiration for this and would be very much obliged if you would help. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, good afternoon. I am Adriana Duffin-Curley, class of 92. And my husband and I are currently working on adopting a baby. Now, people with disabilities traditionally have been viewed more as being on the receiving end of help and not so much as people who are caregivers for others, particularly small children and infants who have such physically demanding needs. Nevertheless, people with all kinds of disabilities, including significant mobility impairments, can and do have babies and take care of them. But one of the main obstacles for caring for a baby, small infant or a toddler, is that the equipment that is commercially available is designed pretty much much all of it, is designed with the abilities and the needs of the typical able-bodied parent. So the target user for this stroller project is a wheelchair user with limitations that are in both the lower and the upper extremities, and who cares for an infant. The goal of the project is for that person to independently and safely take baby out, whether it's to the park, perhaps to an indoor space like a store, and to be able to do that without relying on always carrying the baby, having the baby on the parent's lap. Now, standard stroller that are available, designed that's available commercially, contemplate a standing person grabbing a handle close to the body, walking while pushing the stroller. Brakes are typically foot brakes. And in terms of portability, the mechanisms for folding frequently involve also using feet, having strong hand function, sometimes superhuman strength and engineering degree, although that might be a different problem. And that design is inadequate for the target user for this project. The inadequacies include things like the distance to reach any kind of a handle, if there are issues with hand function, being able to grab a handle at all. Seated height can present issues with visibility. Foot brake, obvious, but the problem is there. And in terms of folding, the things I mentioned, if you need to use feet, have good hand function, have a great deal of strength to do that, that can present a problem. So, the purpose of this project is to design a stroller that gets around these issues, that allows the user to, one, be able to get a baby safely in and out of the stroller, be able to have adequate control over the stroller, address visibility issues, and ideally provide for portability as well. In terms of the skills that would be involved, I expect that they would be purely mechanical engineering skills, and as far as what I bring to the table, it would be my own experience and needs, and possibly also contacts with parents who use wheelchairs.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Elaine Levin, and I got a deal for you. It's not nearly as exciting as that. I have multiple sclerosis, and because of that, I use a walker. I take my... Okay. I have a little schnauzer that I take for a walk. So my challenge is to keep the leash from getting stuck in the wheel, which happens several times while I'm out. So it'll get caught in the back wheel, or get caught in the front, and it's a little unnerving because sometimes I'll be just moving right along and all of a sudden I can't because the wheel is stopped because the leash is being caught. And my poor dog doesn't seem to be complaining, but we're not going anywhere. And it could possibly be a safety issue if I'm not paying attention down there because maybe I'm looking over what we've seen. So I would love some help getting a different kind of leash. There aren't a whole lot of choices out there. Maybe a tube or a coil. I don't know. I would really, really appreciate some help with this. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I've been in this class, maybe 6 years, 7 years. What I am interested in, I have a nonprofit company called Billy Production, and what I really like to do is produce ability for people. And a lot of that comes out of my own experience. Where I am right now is, you know, the ADA is great, but the implementation of it isn't always complete in the places that I go or anybody else goes. So one of the issues is in a power chair like these, a lot of us who are in power chairs can actually stand up. And ergonomically, to stand up where we're pushing from behind is inappropriate for our proprioception. And there's nothing out here. So what, this is a prototype. It's an arm that moves forward that allows me, when the other one's forward, to actually stand in an ergonomically correct position and have balance and base. I can use this if I'm standing in front of a kitchen counter, but where it really comes in handy is the bathrooms that are ADA compliant that aren't. And so I can get in, let's say I can get on the toilet, but now how do I get off and how on earth do I pull up my pants if there's nothing to hold on to? So what I found with this particular design, in terms of proof of concept, it works, but it's really clumsy and difficult to use and challenging to extend out to other people who might need it. So what I'm wanting here is a more elegant solution to being able to have something that moves out that is usable in multiple situations. I think it would require somebody who has a delight in mechanics. Like I say, it already functions. It's just terribly inelegant. So I'm here. I can, through Ability Production, we can offer some support in terms of materials and those things. I'm really good at finding people that have chairs that you could, play with. And I'm good at getting old wheelchairs that you can actually have access to so you can have a functional piece of equipment to work with. So, yeah. Good on the 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Adam Bernstein. I work for Benetech, and I'm a product manager, and we operate the world's largest accessible library for books for people with visual impairment. And so this project is about 3D printing and education. I think this is particularly an exciting time in education as more technologies are coming into the classroom, and particularly with 3D printing, where you have 3D printers are becoming cheaper and more people are creating 3D printable objects and putting them up online. And kind of a big problem that we have right now is there's no central place where objects that are particularly good for people with visual impairment and also other learning need special learning tools to get access to these objects. This is kind of an area of what I'd like to say is tactile graphics and 3D printable objects that are useful for education. An example of some of these objects could be a map that's tactile and has Braille on it, that's 3D printable. Another example could be a periodic table of elements with all the elements that are 3D printed. You can look at energy levels and electrons and actually see all these objects. So kind of the specification for the project is take a human-centered design approach, have you guys go into a classroom and speak with students and speak with teachers and find out what their needs are and how they view that tactile graphics and 3D printable objects can be used in the classroom to help visually impaired students. And then build the foundations of a library, an accessible library of these objects that people can contribute to. I guess some of the skills that you would need are the ability to model and design these 3D objects and also print them, and also have some background with HTML to be able to tag these objects with accessible metadata so they can be searched for on the internet by people who are looking for them. And I'm here to support you guys. At Benetech, we've done a lot of projects with people who have visual impairments, so we know a lot about the area. There's specialists who've worked with tactile graphics that I can connect you to, and also we encourage people to be creative, think about interesting ideas for kind of 3D aids for education. Thank you.
Debbie Kenny couldn't be here this evening, so I'll do the pitch. I'm not sure how much more I can add to this, other than she's looking at projects for people recovering from stroke. They have a problem standing straight. They don't know that they're not standing straight, so a device that would help a person realize chair that they're not standing straight, realize their true center, would be very helpful. Looking at cell phone and tablet holders for make it easier for these people who oftentimes have a weakness in one arm to hold things, and just help them with activities of daily living. Okay. So what I'd like to do now, I mean it's 5:30, I wish that we had like another half an hour, but what we'll do here is that people that have to leave can leave. I got a lot more projects to pitch on my own. So if you can stay and listen to the other projects, it will be fine. And we'll also have an opportunity to come back to for you to meet with the other people who presented earlier. Okay? So we'll just break for a couple minutes, get some fresh air, and come back. And I'll go through my projects really quickly.
Thank you. includes smartphones as well. So, and it doesn't look very good for my hip structures to see using laptops. Okay? Sorry. Otherwise, the class ends up looking like this. Okay. The following people, I'm giving pictures for them. They can't be here, so I'm going to stand in for them. I'm not sure how much I can add to them, other than what's on the website, what's in your handout. So I'll just go through these real quickly. The motion controller is an interesting device that looks at hand gestures. That could be a technology that could be useful for people with disabilities. There's voice recognition hardware out that is very inexpensive. This could be used as a technology to help people with disabilities. Mover scooper for folks in wheelchairs. You know, not only do you have to walk the dog, you have to deal with the results of walking the dog. So you can't train every dog to do this. So you may need another device. This is a patch from the VA. They actually have one of these racing bikes here, and they're hand powered, and the very low to the ground recumbent, extreme recumbent bikes. The individual's legs are forward, but they're only supported at the end, so the knee tends to get hyperextended. So what's needed is a way to support that and to keep the knee from hitting the wheel. You know, otherwise, you're going to get injured. So this is really neat. We'll see this in a few weeks when we go through the VA. This is sort of an easy project. There's one guy who uses a microphone to operate his voice control electronics. And the solutions that he has don't fit very well. They're uncomfortable. They don't have great amplification. So it might be something that an individual project could pursue. Also, these bed controls are hard to use by people with quadriplegia because their buttons are recessed. And hard to press, so that's another problem looking for a solution there. People who use touchscreen devices, this is using a mouse stick if they don't have use of their arms at all, but a lot of people have minimal use of their hands, and if you have to be precise or to do a click or to do a drag and drop, it's really difficult, so maybe looking for a solution for that problem. Ryan Higgins from the VA is a blind researcher, has suggested a project, a guide robot for the blind. He's looking for somebody to come up with a tactile user interface that would be used by the blind user. There are slides here from last year that are on the website, and we'll go through them. There's his email. Aman has a couple ideas for devices that would visualize and communicate the symptoms of retinal detachment. It's hard to describe that. It's a really weird phenomenon. And so it would be good to have an app that would that you can refer to. Also, for he has a couple of projects looking at stuttering. So read about those on the in your handout. These are his slides. I included them. They're on the website. A colleague of mine, Pat McCarty, her husband has had a stroke, and he uses his wheelchair as a walker. But he doesn't have use of one arm, so he has to push the wheelchair with one arm, and that's not always easy to do, especially going into tight places, making turns and stuff like that. So there's got to be a way that you can come up with a device that would make it easier for him to use a walker or a wheelchair user as a walker for him to use. This is one of my favorite projects. I hope somebody will take it on for political correct purposes. I call it a customized wheelchair, but it's really hip-hop on wheelchair. So, and there was a fellow here Tuesday who would be a wheelchair user who would greatly benefit from a fifth-out wheelchair. Mm-hmm. So anything goes.
I have.
Folks who use wheelchairs need to this
best treats their dog. It's difficult to do so. So come up maybe with a wireless device or something mounted on a chair that will dispense the treats. That would be good. Household chores. A lot of these tasks are really tough to do if you're older or limited use of your arms. So looking at ways to help people clean their house, and that would enable them to stay in their house longer. There's all sorts of projects for veterans with disabilities, and here's Dean with Deanna at the VA last year. So Dean is a peer liaison to the group of disabled veterans who are getting health care in our inpatients at the VA Medical Center. So I've known him for years and years and years, so he's a really nice guy. My project, do something that would help a person with a disability with their creative expression. This is one that was a tongue and cheek one, because the D-School has a course called Design Your Life or Designing Your Life at Stanford, and so my work, made it Designing Your Afterlife. And if you read the description, the first line is, death is the most severe form of disability. So anything that you could do to help create an internal persona for an individual, create a sort of interest in this, and it'll help you out. So this is really neat. I can imagine like a computer with a personality. You download your personality into a computer, you can ask the questions, and it can tell you stories or string of photographs and stuff like that. So, maybe it's a serious project. So, lots of other project options. You can define your own project with my approval within certain limits. And there's all sorts of projects listed on NSC guidebook. And then there's all the software projects suggested by Project Possibility. Does anybody remember Floppy Disk Drives? So on Tuesday we'll get a lot of student engagement with John and Gail. John's in the back there, so we'll see him again next week. We'll be breaking up into groups and learning how to do need finding and do a lot of the design process that you need in pursuing these projects. So thanks for sticking around, and I really apologize that I had so many projects, but it's because there were so many students, so it's your fault. Leave your project preferences, and I'll get you guys all connected. Go to the course website and preferences, HTML, see what other people have picked out to QR groups and stuff like that.
Thank you.